Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Made it. It's the start of another week. Are you ready? Are you excited? Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Maybe you're doing chores. Maybe you're on a walk. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes with gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, Brooklinen, Blue Apron, and Gamefly. They bring the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who is always cosplaying as Christian Spicer. Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Yeah, I hope you like, I spent a lot of time on this outfit, and I think it looks pretty good.
Yeah, man. It's, you nailed you. Comic-Con this week, which is where that reference came from. I did not go. I used to go, and I kind of don't go anymore, but we got some video game news out of it. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We got some games we've been playing, and we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know, DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian, but this week, oh man, I'm excited because DLC stands for DeSanto's Leisure Consumption, because from I Eat Games, the YouTube channel, the Twitch channel, we are pleased to welcome Mark DeSanto to the show. Hey, Mark.
Hello. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello. Hello. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Let us jump right in. We got some stuff to talk about. You know, it is summer. Things are not exactly, you know, exploding with news, but it's a fun time to kind of catch up on other games. I've been playing a lot of stuff that I kind of drifted away from. So we got a lot to talk about. Let's start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by visiting our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com, where cool folks hang and cool folks talk about the show and about video games. Give it a shot. Join the community. A lot of cool people over there. But Mark, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. I wonder what your story of the week is.
Before I pick, I do want to say one thing real quick. You guys, I, I love your podcast. This is complete honesty, and I'm going to take my head all the way up and say one of the best gaming podcasts out there. I love how you guys are just not cynical about everything, and I just feel like there's so much of that in podcasts and on Twitter. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but it's just nice that you guys give honest opinions and there's not a lot of cynicism. I appreciate
that. Well, thanks for saying that, man. I really appreciate that. And I'm glad you're here with us. I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate you contributing. So let's jump right in. So what is your story of the week?
All right. Well, I am not a huge fan of special consoles, but the first ever console I think is actually really cool with a special marking is the Spider-Man PS4 Pro that was announced at Comic-Con. Have you guys seen this?
Yeah, man. They had the big Marvel Games panel at Comic-Con in Hall H there.
Yeah.
And we saw a new trailer for Spider-Man PS4 and this big announcement of the PS4 Pro bundle with the cool Spider-Man branding. It's red. It's got that iconic video game Spider-Man white logo because I think white they've kind of carved out for the video game as being the differentiator there is that the spider is white in the video game. And so it is also on this cool console. Like the whole top is the spider logo. It's got a red DualShock controller that looks really slick when the blue light on the front lights up. It's got red and white, and then that blue light shines. You know, it looks very Spider-Man-y. You're digging this one, huh?
I love it. I mean, I normally don't like these kinds of – I just prefer regular vanilla consoles, and I don't put stickers on my consoles. But I just love how – restrained they were with their design. I mean, it's just like big, bright, screaming candy apple red with a logo, a nice Spider-Man logo. There's not like, you know, 13 Spider-Mans crawling around it or, you know, cobwebs everywhere or, you know, the Green Goblin flying around. It's just like this simple, cool design. And I think I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the side of somebody's van. You know, sometimes those custom things will just look too far, too much.
Yeah, it doesn't have like wizards or anything on it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or like a pack of wolves running through the forest chasing a demon. Yeah.
When this was announced, Christian, you and I were in the same room and we were talking about it. And I actually voiced feelings very similar to what Mark just said about how I don't usually go for stuff like this. But man, that one for some reason got me kind of excited. I don't really care about the branded Halo Xbox and the branded Star Wars PS4. And none of them have really floated my boat. But that Spider-Man logo, something about that Spider-Man logo and the bright red, like Mark was talking about, that feels different. And you were not so certain, right?
Well, I just got upset for my own personal console center, where I think the comment I made to you was, it's going to have to be vertical, and I'd have no space for a vertical console. Like, it's so iconic, and I think part of it, the reason why it jumped out to you and I, Jeff, is we both love the character so much, and I imagine same for Mark as well. I mean, it's such an iconic character, and this is such a clean representation of that, and to know that I would have that slid horizontally in an entertainment center, it was just like it was kind of like the same thing with the collector's edition for the game. I was like, I really want this. I literally have nowhere in my house to put the little sculpt that it comes with, but I really want it. And same with this console, it was like, well, this looks really nice and really clean, and I would never see it because it would just be in a closed entertainment center. So I think it's good because it saved me $400, but it's a really sharp design, especially the controller.
Yeah, you're right. Like at the end of the day, I love it, but I wouldn't buy it. I mean, unless I was actually really in the market for a Pro and I went to the store and there it was, because it doesn't cost anymore, right?
Right. Yeah, no, I feel like this is the early adopters cross to bear is, you know, I got the first one, and so I got the one. I guess I could go through the rigmarole of selling my PS4 Pro and getting a cool branded one. It just seems like so much work. I feel like these are to entice people that haven't jumped on board yet, and I think this is a pretty cool enticement, but there's no way I would. I'm just kind of thinking about it in the abstract, like, yeah, that looks really cool,
right?
But there's, I mean, I'm not going to replace my PS4 Pro just for a paint job.
But I'd love to see the data on that, like if it exists, like how many people are repeat buyers, how many people use this to jump on as their entry into the pro. They've maybe been hanging out with a slim or whatever, or an OG. And then how many people are, you know, they have five different PlayStation 4s because that's the thing that some people buy, you know, soup up their car, and other people collect consoles. I'd be really curious for every collector's edition, because I know I have friends that have, I think, five 3DSs at this point, and I feel like that's not even the max that they could have, you know?
Yeah. Well, 3DSs are like $99. That's a little different than collecting $400, $500 console, you know?
But there does seem to be like a new theme coming out every week, right? There's for the 3DSs.
That's true.
It just seems like there's always a new one.
There's certainly, I guess there's the new Pokemon one. It looks like a Pokeball. And there's a whole bunch of them. I agree with you, Christian, about the vertical thing. Like the way they show it is vertical. It certainly seems like you lose all the coolness when it's horizontal. Cause then if you're looking at it horizontally, basically you just see a red console, which is okay. But right. I feel like there could have been something on the front. I agree with you, Mark, that I don't want too much, but I think something on the front for the horizontal people would have been nice. But yeah, this is a neat thing. And I think it kind of emphasizes how important this game is for Sony and how much they're banking on it being a big hit and how big of a deal they wanted to make about it. And, I'm super excited for Spider-Man coming out. And this will hit alongside the game on September 7th. So
God, the game looks so good.
Yeah.
We've gone full circle on it, where now the Spider-Man font, more, for lack of a better word, is back on a PlayStation. It's been a generation since we had Spider-Man on a PlayStation. Before it said PlayStation 3, but it was that Sam Raimi Spider-Man font. So it's nice to see that loop completed.
Yeah, exactly. Right. All right, Christian, what is your story of the week?
People have likely seen it because I think it has millions of views, but we need to talk about it, even though it happened kind of soon after last week's show, it feels like, and he was teasing it before that, but the dream has been realized, and we got to see Nathan Fillion play the live action version of the character that he inspired or was part of between him and Indiana Jones. And he got to team up with director Alan Unger to make a fan film, essentially, of Uncharted, where Nathan.
You said essentially. I think that was
essentially. Well,
Freudian slip. I think you really liked the movie essentially.
Nathan Fillion could read me the like the phone book, and I would think it's entertaining. So
sensual. Yeah. No, I agree. He is charming, charming, charming fella. Anyway, go ahead. Keep going.
Oh, I was gonna say. I mean, it was really well crafted, and it was cool to see that realization. I don't know if we'll ever get to see another version of, Fillion playing Drake, and it's something I think most people have wanted to see in some form or fashion. And, they went for it, and I think they did it way more right than they did wrong. And it makes me excited to see more of this character on the big screen. I think if anything, it proves that the character works outside of a video game, which I don't think is a surprise to anybody, but like I said, Fillion is so charming.
The version we're getting on the big screen is him at like 19.
But also Tom Holland is so charming. So I don't want to judge that until I see it.
Right. But I don't know if it proves that the movie's going to be good, because the movie's taking a very, very different approach to it. But I agree with you. I really enjoyed this short, and it really does feel like wish fulfillment. I thought it was just really well written and funny and fun, and Nathan Fillion delivering all those quips is just, it's so fun to see him in sticky situations and riffing and making fun of people and making fun of himself. And that self-deprecating humor works so well. And it just so in line with the character, and you just understand why this was the actor they kind of had in their head when they were making this character.
It really works. Yeah. I mean, it really does.
Yeah. And it's fun. There's a moment in it. I hope this isn't really a spoiler for anybody that hasn't seen it yet, but there's a moment in it where it kind of assumes the camera position of the video game, and like when he holds up his gun, it zooms in like you get in the video game. And I just thought that was, it's total pandering to the audience, but in the best possible way.
But like, we're the audience, so
right, exactly. And it's, I feel like if that was a big screen version of it, I might find it a little more objectionable, just like the first person sequence in Doom was.
I was just about to say, as long as they don't do it for like 5-10 minutes where
but in a short, I you know, that is about fan service and about this wish fulfillment thing. I think it was really fun and clearly expensive. And what's his name? What's the name of the guy who plays Sully? The guy from Avatar. He was great. It was all great.
Yeah.
Mark, if I may ask you one question, do you have a property that you want to see like a star-studded fan film of? Not a major motion picture, but like Michael B. Jordan as Kratos, or like what's the thing?
Well, I mean, a while back, my thing was Vin Diesel would have been so good as Kratos for a while there because he had the right voice. And he was, yeah. I mean, you know, way back when, like 10 years ago, when Fast and the Furious, like when he was still pretty young. I mean, I guess he's fine now, but... not really. I mean, honestly, the only thing I would like to see get a really serious treatment for a film is maybe Metroid. Like if they could take it and make it capture the same feeling of it, there aren't a lot of video games that I want to see on the big screen. I mean, this did look really good. It was fun to watch. I'm not quite sure I want to see a full movie of it though, because I feel like the game is already so cinematic and it's so... It is basically like a movie, you know? I don't know. I don't know if I'm that excited for this to make the transition to the big screen. I mean, I know it's already happening, but I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way when you talk about Vin Diesel 10 years ago. The movie that they would have made, even the short, even the fan film version, would have been the old version of God of War, which would have been cheesy. And I feel like the best possible version of a God of War movie is the one I played this year for 40 hours, you know,
right.
Like,
that's right.
Like,
yeah.
I don't think it gets better than that. I feel like that movie is so, or that game is so cinematic and, you know, was acted by actors. And just because they happen to be digital, I agree with you. It's kind of similar to what Naughty Dog does that. I don't know if you can even make a version of a God of War movie that would be better than the game we all played this year.
Yeah, and I guess the reason why I feel that way about Metroid is because I feel like they could do something in that world that's interesting that the games don't do. Because some of them can be thick in narrative, but I feel like it is not like Uncharted where we're getting story beats all the time. It is about exploring that world. It's so video gamey, right?
Right.
And if somebody smart enough could take that and turn it into an interesting film, that could be pretty cool. But I'm also like a really big Metroid fan, so
that's totally blanking on his name, which is, I've been trying to think of, the Kong Skull Island director.
Oh, Peter Jackson.
No, the other one. not King Kong.
Oh, Kong. Oh.
tip of my tongue, man.
I'm finding it.
Are you looking it up?
Jordan Boyd Roberts.
What was it?
Jordan Voight Roberts.
That doesn't jump out at me, but I believe that's right.
Who are you trying to think of? What's going on?
The director of Skull Island. He talked about he's directing a video game movie next. He's attached to a video game property.
Oh, okay.
Metal Gear. He's doing Metal Gear.
Oh.
And he said he was talking about the thing he'd want to do after that is Metroid. But he's like, my pitch would never work because it would literally just be Samus would be the only... it'd be her
speaking character. Okay. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
that's okay. I mean, but that game is all about loneliness and like this melancholy,
yeah,
this like unattached feeling of being on this planet. And if it's really Samus doing just that, I mean, that could totally work, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think you could do it like almost like a silent film, you know? It could be almost like a Mad Max Fury Road for large stretches where nobody says anything and it's just all told through action. I mean, that could be an amazing experience.
So
yeah. I mean, she could maybe be recording her thoughts in something and you could get that, but...
Would you say an audio log?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Something she's scanning with her visor. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that could be really cool, but I don't know if anybody would have the guts to actually make that into a movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, unfortunately, those games don't sell super well, so they I don't think anybody would actually, unless it was like a, you know, somebody else making the film on their own dime.
The problem is I could imagine about 400 ways that the Metroid movie is not good and very few that where it is good, so that's
oh my god. Yeah,
yeah. Metroid my Prime story of the again. Week oh sorry what was that
sorry I said Metroid Prime 2 all over just repeat yeah. that it must be the
yeah.
worst
right My story of the week is I guess, I don't know if you would call it a rumor or an indication. During a Mixer channel chat with their fans, developers at 343 were talking a little bit about Halo Infinite, which of course was unveiled at E3, or maybe not unveiled, revealed. We still don't know much about it, but one thing everybody has been guessing about Halo Infinite is whether or not it would have a Battle Royale mode, because if you make a shooter these days, you kind of have to, evidently, because everybody's doing it. But the writer at 343, who's working on Halo Infinite, Jeff Easterling, he said, he's known, by the way, as Grim Brother One in their forums. He said, "I'll tell you right now, the only BR we're interested in is Battle Rifle, the original BR. So you can calm yourself."
Mm-hmm.
So, it sounds like people want to talk. Go ahead, Christian. What were you
maybe he means the story team. The only, mm-hmm. Like, there's fun ways to parse that, right? Like, the only one we, as a writer, are worried right. about is a Battle Rifle.
This is a weird one because it seems like, why wouldn't you implement this? Because Battle Royale it's fun and everybody enjoys it. But at the same time, maybe it's a smart move because they feel like they don't have anything to add to it and they want to focus, you know, the resources on doing something else. I mean, maybe they want to introduce something new that could replace Battle Royale. I don't know. I mean, but it does seem risky, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that's the question I'd like to pose. Mark, do you think Battle Royale is required these days, or do you think it's become so ubiquitous that it actually doesn't have any
right.
cachet anymore? There's no reason to do it because everybody's doing it.
Well, Infinite is so far off. Like, I think they're probably making the right choice here because I don't know how long it's going to be around. But again, by the time this comes out, maybe they just feel like they don't have anything to add to it and nobody would probably play it because, I mean, if you think about Fortnite and how much it's gobbled up, how many people are playing other battle royales, you know?
Well, we'll find out when Call of Duty and Battlefield both launch, right? I guess we'll
That's
find out.
That's the big
out. Test. Yeah.
I think.
And I suppose, you know, between now and when they put out Halo Infinite, they can always add it in. And this certainly isn't a
totally.
Binding contract by any means. But I kind of agree that I think it does, at this point, for franchises that have been around a long time and haven't had them, it feels a little Me Too-y. You know what?
Right.
I mean, actually, that's a phrase I probably shouldn't use. It feels a little everybody's doing it, so I have to as well. So I kind of feel like it makes them seem less, you know, going with the crowd. If your
right.
friend jumps off a bridge, would you kind of think?
It's not quite as Cool Ranch as I thought it was
right.
the first time, right? It's like right. at first I was like, this is nuts. Why wouldn't you guys do this? But yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, it just kind of seems like they're smart. They know what they're doing. They probably want to put those resources somewhere else. And also, yeah, maybe they don't want to do like a Me Too thing, you know?
Christian, a mutual friend of ours who has some insight into this, I was grilling at E3 about Halo Infinite and trying to squeeze out information. He was well trained and didn't reveal anything, but he did say, and I said, what even is Halo Infinite? He said, Halo Infinite is everything. And so I ask you, if it's not everything, this clearly indicates it's not everything, because this might not be one of the things it is. Good thing, bad thing. What do you think?
Well, first, I need to say that Vita means life. So just because, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's everything. I'm curious to see, backing up your question a little bit, and I apologize. I'm curious to see how Call of Duty and Battlefield's take on the genre go. Because I'm not sure if either are coming with the game at launch. It appears as if both might be coming post-launch at some point for those franchises. And they will just be additional modes within already pretty heavy multiplayer games that have fans of their other modes. And I would argue the same thing is true with Halo, where Halo has fans of its various modes and its type of gunplay. And I remember when it first moved to left trigger, right trigger, right? And you got the aim down the scope kind of thing to Halo, people thought that was fundamentally changing Halo. So if Halo abandoned even more so its traditional multiplayer in pursuit of a battle royale, you know, how would fans feel about that? And I feel like 343 is still maybe trying to put Halo back on the map in a way, and maybe they feel that following trends isn't the way to do it, and they need right. to either be true to themselves or lead the next thing.
That's the other thing, right? It could be this really respectable thing where they really earnestly want to just not do that and create something else potentially new. You know, I'm hoping it's that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be excited either way. You and I, at least, Jeff, I played, you know, a lot of Battle Royale, and I enjoy the genre. I enjoy Halo, so I'd be curious to see their take on it. I think it's certainly something that would work well, especially if you're, you know, playing as a shielded character where you take down shields, and how that changes things if you spawn with a shield and you're not out trying to find armor to do it. And the weapons, I think, are really neat and interesting for how they would vary with, like, a Needler or something like that in that space, and trying to get a plasma and a traditional weapon to take down a shield and then switch to that to finish him off. So I think the franchise certainly works for a battle royale, but I also agree with what Mark said that, you know, Infinite feels infinitely far off at this point. So why rush to do something that might not exist a year from now?
So wait a second. When you asked him about what is Infinite, he said it is everything. But not Battle Royale, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think he was being a little tongue-in-cheek, but because Infinite is in the title.
Right.
But yes.
It is everything. It's almost like maybe your tweet inspired them. Like, they sat down, they're like, what if Halo had an amazing cinematic story?
Yeah.
I love that. By the way, I love that tweet. That's like, I love that tweet.
Thank you. Thank you. It's amazing how many people have tweeted me later on and gone, I had you wrong on that one. Oh. We don't need to relitigate that.
No, we don't.
Also,
we don't.
Though, guys, Disney was called Disney Infinity, and it was definitely Disney Very Finite. So I
no joke on that one. That's harsh reality.
Yeah, I loved that game.
I did
It was good game, and it was good figures, but
it was good with the kids. Like my 6-year-old loved running around just that hub in the beginning. I mean, it was neat.
Well, let's get talking about some of the games that we have been playing this week. But first, let me thank our first sponsor, which is Brooklinen. I sleep such as it is. I have two kids under two, so I don't sleep often, but I sleep well. In fact, part of what I love most about finally climbing into bed and carving out just a few precious hours of sleep is that I am resting on my Brooklinen sheets. My wife and I, exclusive on Brooklinen sheets. That's the only sheets we will lay our weary heads upon at the end of our day and in the crack of dawn as we return back to bed after being up with our kids. Because Brooklinen is, they're the most comfortable sheets I've ever had, honestly. They are really well made. They are stylish. They look great. My wife actually picked out our Brooklinen sheets because she liked how they looked in our room. We have these cool, we got a duvet cover, we got pillowcases and sheets, and they're this white and gray stripe that's really slick and elegant and very minimal. Like my wife really enjoys that style. They're great. They are reasonably priced. There's no big markup because they're sold to you online. These Brooklinen, by the way, was founded back in 2014 by a husband and wife team, Vicky and Rich, and they decided they wanted to make beautiful home essentials with not the crazy prices you usually find with those home essentials, because most bedding is marked up as much as 300%. Not Brooklinen. Brooklinen have these super high quality, luxurious sheets that I love to crawl into bed in. My goodness, I would do it right now if I could. I really would. I am exhausted. But Brooklinen sheets are the winner of the best online bedding category by Good Housekeeping. They got all kinds of colors and patterns to choose from. You should check it out. I love my Brooklinen sheets. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for DLC listeners. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code DLC at Brooklinen.com. And Brooklinen is so confident that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all of their sheets and comforters. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code DLC at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code DLC. Brooklinen. Use the best sheets ever. Some new games coming out here and there this summer, but I'm curious, Mark, how you are spending your time playing games. What games are on your playlist right now? Are you playing the newest and hottest stuff? Are you kind of going back to your backlog? What's taking up your time?
Yeah, I'm actually going back to my backlog, and it is. I'm sure you guys have experienced this, but you kind of get that. It's slipping my mind. The analysis paralysis, where you have so much stuff from Steam sales and other sales, and I have no idea what to play. But anyway, yeah, I've been kind of catching up on stuff that I had tucked away. The first game that I have fallen head over heels in love with is Hollow Knight. I love this game. I love it. And judging
by
my...
What are you playing it on?
I'm playing it on the Switch.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so good on the Switch, because I don't know about you guys, but doing third-person or first-person games on the Switch, playing them on there, is kind of difficult with the left stick and the buttons being a little too high. So Zelda, I always had to use a Pro Controller.
Interesting.
So I really... So for 2D games like this, it's just perfect. It's so good to just take it, you know, and throw it in the car and bring it with me somewhere. It's great. But judging from my timeline, the communities definitely love this game too. And you know what? I hope it continues to be played and revered for all its excellence.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Hollow Knight from other people. A lot of people describe it as being very challenging. Has that been your experience as well?
It is. Yeah, it's really challenging. One of the things I love about it is that it sort of sticks out amongst all these other Metroidvania games on the Switch, like SteamWorld Dig 2, which is excellent, by the way. Axiom Verge, excellent. Dandara, Iconoclast. I've got all these great games that follow the same paradigm, right? But Hollow Knight manages to stand above all these great games. And it sort of takes... So with the difficulty thing, yeah, when you die, it has that Souls-esque thing where you sort of dump all your gems and you start over at a bench, which is where you save your game, which is sort of similar to a bonfire, I guess. And you got to go back to your corpse, and you have to fight like your shadow of yourself. And you have to hit yourself like two or three times. So it's not that.
Does it say, why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself?
Right.
Like an older brother.
Or like the alligator in Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
But it's just, this game is so, it's so finely tuned, and it keeps opening itself up to me, and it's dungeonous and sort of creepy, and there are bugs everywhere. And I'm amazed at the diversity of the enemies. I mean, I'm serious. There's like 100 enemies, and they, not all of them, but most of them sort of operate and have different attack patterns. And that's good, because you have all these different tools to attack them. And so I hate nothing else when you're playing a game and there's like three enemies,
right?
And you know, you get deeper into the game and they're different, but it's like a palette swap. There isn't really, they just have more armor or something. But with the variety of the enemies and the variety of all the special abilities you have, which is, they're all very like Metroidvania-esque, with like the Mantis Claw allows you to hop onto a wall and you could sort of grip onto it and hold on. And there's, you get this cloak and it allows you to sort of dash forward. So it has all the like iconic abilities and more. I've not beaten the game. I think I'm about 12 hours into it, but it's funny because this game in a way, with like the Souls sort of inspired part of it, you just you dig and you go through the game, and there is no save anywhere. You save at like a bench. So if you die, you respawn at the bench. So you better be careful. And sometimes you'll stumble into these boss fights, and they're always challenging. And between the abilities that you can set up, because you have these pens that you can get, and the pens, you have it a certain allotment of basically slots, and you can have a pen that will increase the distance at which you can strike objects, right? But that'll take up 3 of the 6 slots. So you have to
have like a build out, a loadout.
Right. And so with this loadout, you can increase that stuff and you can find more pens that have other abilities, but you have these sort of difficult choices that you have to make. And finding is what is critically important to your play style. You know, like, do you want to get stuff that'll help with like healing or offensive stuff? Like, what do you need help with, or what are you good at? You want to exploit that. And it is, it's so oppressive though at times, like talking about when you'll come across these boss fights, and there's a lot of them. And I say that happily. I love boss fights, like a good, well-tuned boss fight. And so far they all have been, but after going through, like, working your way back down to where your body is and fighting a boss who seems impossible, just like in Dark Souls, and you die again for the third time. I mean, it's just exhausting. Like, I have to like walk away from this game, and I'm like, I just don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I can just do this anymore. And of course, you know, the next day I'm firing it up and I'm feeling great and I beat him, you know, and it's just so well tuned. I love it. And by the way, it's $15.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So if you guys haven't, Jeff, you said you have not. Christian, have you not played it?
I dabbled with it when it first launched on PC, and I was like, this is great. I can't wait to play more of it. And then it became part of my backlog, and I never went back to it.
Highly recommend you crack it open and give it another shot. Did you get it on the Switch?
Or are you talking about? I was playing it on PC back in the day. I haven't picked it up on Switch yet. If I play it again, that is how I will play it, because I love
like
that console.
The Switch shine on the game is helping. I don't know, but it's just great, because picking it up and playing it handheld mode feels just as good as playing it on the TV, in my opinion. So, yeah, obviously I love this game. I think it's great.
Yeah, in the chat, Casey Asante has your back. He says, I'm almost 20 hours in and I still feel lost most of the time, but I have to say it's so good. I think you're absolutely right, Mark, in the sense that this particular subgenre is super crowded.
It is, right?
A lot of really stellar games in that category. And I think it's easy to be like, oh man, another great Metroidvania that has to, you know, another great Souls-like or roguelike that you know is challenging. And I feel like, at least anecdotally, a lot of my friends around the same time that Hollow Knight was getting a lot of buzz were playing Celeste, and you know, there's like all these great games that are in that same sort of category. It's hard to keep up with all of them, but Hollow Knight definitely seems to have risen above the crowd.
It does. And I have to say, I mean, if I could just add one more thing, it's just, you know how when some games you play and you get new abilities and it kind of seems like you don't use those abilities, or you kind of forget. I'm using everything almost all the time. And again, I've not beaten the game, and I know there's some more stuff I need to unlock, but so far you start using stuff and you get that one of the most exciting things with the Metroidvania is when you get that new ability and you remember those particular areas you couldn't get to because you didn't have the hook or whatever. And it's like, I cannot wait to go back and see what is up in this area. And in this game, that little area could be like, you know, a little worm in a jar that you need to save, or it could be this entire new area. And sometimes when that happens, it's really exciting. So,
well, you're tempting me. And B Millie 116 in the chat says, please play. It's one of the best indie games on the Switch by far.
Yep.
The bad news for me is
you hate the Switch.
No, I love the Switch. The bad news for me is that in just 2 weeks, what is it? Dead Cells.
Oh, Dead Cells. Isn't
it comes out on Switch. It comes on Switch on August 6th.
Oh, it does. Okay.
So,
chances are good. You got 2 weeks to beat Hollow Knight, Jeff.
I guess so.
I mean, 15 bucks. That's too costly.
So excited for Dead Cells. I can't even tell you. I've played countless hours of it on PC already, and I'm going to start it again on Switch because It'll be great on Switch.
So I did pre-order that on the Switch, and I'm really excited for it. I've got to go back and listen to you talk about it, because you also sold me, I don't know if you remember this, but you sold me on Resident Evil 7 in VR.
Mm.
And I wasn't going to do it, and I heard you talk about it, and then it turned out to be like one of my favorite VR experiences. So.
Did you finish it, Mark?
I did not. I didn't finish
it. We couldn't do it.
We couldn't do it. Ourselves too many times. Yeah.
Oh my God. The part where you're in the water.
Oh yeah. I mean,
I am not claustrophobic, and I was hyperventilating basically. My wife is like, what are you doing with that helmet on? Hyperventilating. I'm like, I swear I'm in water. Nothing creepy is going on here.
Just the mere fact of how often I have to be crouched behind something as something terrible is just shambling by. It's one thing. I mean, now we're talking about a game, however old, but whatever. It's one thing to be in a first-person shooter or first-person horror game and have to like move your controller over to peek out from behind the box to see the thing. It's another thing entirely when you're literally leaning your head around a bookcase to see the horrible thing walking inches from your face.
You feel like you could get hurt. I don't want to do it. Something could hurt my eyeball, you know?
Yes. Well, Dead Cells is not that, but also a game that I've thoroughly enjoyed on PC, and I can't wait to try it on Switch. But you have also been playing another game that's kind of an oldie, but recently updated.
Yeah, I've had a weird relationship with this game. It's Shadow of War. And I've had this game for quite a while, a couple weeks after launch.
This is I get the names wrong. This is the sequel, the second one.
Yeah, yes, it's the newest one. And I loved the first one. I played through it twice, actually. Loved the first one. And so with this game, they kept patching it, and they kept making it better, and they kept adding DLC. So I just kept letting it bake and just sit there and patch and bake and bake. And so I finally they released a really big patch that basically rebalanced the game, stripped out like all the gold stuff that you could buy, and rebalanced, I think, the Nemesis system and a couple other things. So I was going to play it like a month ago, heard about the patch, decided to wait. So I fired it up, and I have been playing this game for, I think, about 6-7 hours. And it's weird because this is going to sound strange, but it's like, even now, 6 hours into it, it feels too big and too banal and kind of empty and repetitive. And it sounds weird to say that because it has the hooks that the first one had, but it's like they added too many hooks, and it's kind of annoying. It's like, it's like sitting at a dinner table and the waiter just keeps bringing more food, and I'm still trying to eat the really tasty potato salad that you brought,
you mean fogo de chao salad. I think you're talking about fogo de chao.
More meat.
But and they won't stop, and there's just like this stuff keeps being dumped on the table, and I can't consume it all, and I'm not enjoying the potato salad in particular, and it's weird, but I keep playing. I'm a bad gamer. Tell me I'm a bad gamer, guys, because
I think you're a good gamer. You're more committed than I. I'm to the point now where I just jump off of things if they're not keeping me.
I need to get better at that. Well, but it's like, as you know, when it has this massive skill tree, and there are tons of things to unlock, and the skill points come pretty quickly, and you can move faster, and you could do some other things faster, and that's alleviating some of my complaints. But did you guys like the first one?
Christian, it was like your game of the year that year, right? You loved it.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've been most shocked about is how little you cared to even
venture into the second one.
Play this one at all.
I played it. I got it right when it came out, put, I don't know, maybe 6-7 hours into it or something like that. And it just did not click for me. I don't know if it was the microtransaction-y stuff or maybe the scale, the way you're talking. It might still be up. I think my first hour is on my Twitch or on my YouTube. And I feel like I just rolled really poorly, where I would stumble into these orcs and try to run away, and like the collision detection felt off. Just something about it didn't feel as it didn't click the way the first one did for me. And so I as Jeff said, I too kind of bounce off things. There's always something else to play or something I haven't played that I already have that I should be playing. And so it was easy to move off of. And I thought about going back to it now with this patch the way you did, Mark. But I've also been playing tons of other stuff already. So it's hard for a game to win me over again. I'm wondering if No Man's Sky will pull me back in, not to change to another game, but like,
oh my God,
another huge update. Please, but I'm also kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, and it just like seems like they want to quickly, oh, check out this new feature. Look at this thing. And they trip all over themselves. For instance, with the Nemesis system, you know, they have sort of pushed out some new little features here and there, like the captains now can ambush you.
Yes.
And so you can be crawling through a bush and all of a sudden,
yes,
I am Grog, the toad licker, and I'm going to eat you. And it's like, dude, like I was totally setting up this whole stealth thing for like 12 minutes. And it's not, it sounded kind of exciting when they talked about it, but it's been really kind of annoying and it's not fun. And so I end up either running away or fighting them and not loving it. So
it's interesting how more isn't better in this case. You know, it's
right.
Like, you guys love this first game. We're going to do that, but more. And it's like, nah, we don't want more.
Right. they need to like refine some of the stuff. I don't know. I'm going to continue to play it. I'm sure I'll have more thoughts about it on Twitter, but not loving it. So I've been just bouncing back to Hollow Knight. Nice. So what about you guys?
Yeah, Christian, what's on your playlist this week?
Well, I think kind of similar to this, or Mark, what you were saying is we've talked about it. This will be the third week in the row, but now I'm playing it. Octopath Traveler, where I'm not super deep. I know it's a large game, but I keep thinking as I'm playing it, like, I don't know, am I having that much fun playing this? And then cut to, it's been an hour, and then I put it down because I have to do something else, and all I can think about is playing it again. So clearly I'm having fun playing it. Everybody said it, but I'm going to say it. It's my turn to say it now. Just stunning. I'm not sure how the game clicks if it doesn't look as incredible as it does. That mix of kind of paper crafty with Super NES pixel graphics and what's the word? Tilt focus.
Tilt shift. Yeah,
the tilt shift going on and even like particles kind of raining down in the snow or smoke. And the beasts that you encounter, the enemies that you fight all look really cool. It's another Square game where I want there to be an anime inspired by it because I think so much of the creature design and character design just looks absolutely incredible. And then the battle mechanic is, I don't play a lot of JRPGs, or I haven't, I guess, since the 16-bit era. It's not a genre. Persona 5, Persona 4, like some of them pull me in, and Pokemon and stuff like that. But this traditional JRPG of yore, I haven't played tons of growing up. And getting into it now with Octopath, the combat mechanic or the battle strategies that you have with your companions and the people that are with you in your party and the people that you can pull in that aren't always necessarily fighting with you and trying to find someone in town who has an attack that is one of these enemies' weaknesses that you've discovered through battle. So you want to go back to town and get this guy from the tavern to join you and summon him because he'll be able to break the shield of this monster that you can't otherwise break as quickly. So it gives you that one extra attack, and then you have the shield broken, and you can unleash this huge combo with your character and take down the enemy. It's just really fun watching this back and forth of seeing how your squad interacts and how you get to plan strategy for battles against some of the bigger monsters. And one thing that threw me for a loop at first with it is it's been even longer, I think, since I've played a game like this where the enemy's health is hidden. And I'm not sure if later in the game you get an awaken or something like that skill where you can see it. But where I am in the game, you don't see the enemy's health. So I see that I'm doing 400 damage, but I don't know if the enemy has 2 billion, you know, or if they have 401. So my character is down to 70. They just hit me with 150. So I know that they have an attack that's capable of eliminating me and their next attack, but I've hit them for 1200 already. Do I press and risk it, or do I heal or send one of my companions in to take the blow? And it just changes the strategy from something where you can see the enemy health and how you engage in that encounter that is both rewarding and frustrating, where I was up against a boss and I felt like I was just wailing on this boss, just going to town on them. And then they just unleashed this like multiple hundred hit attack on me and just eliminated me there with that turn when I was at almost full health. And I was like, no, how close was I? Like, was I close? Was I not close? Do I want to know if I was close? And what I did is I remembered my 16-bit era roots, and I was like, okay, boss, game on. I'll see you in an hour. I'm going to be grinding your minions until I come back way OP and I'm able to take you down. And even that felt very satisfying, where it was like, okay, I'm level 10 now. There's no way. There's no way you can challenge me anymore. But I also didn't know if they could challenge me, because I don't see what their HP is when I walk into the fight. It's a really engaging game, and I've enjoyed the plot so far. I think some people maybe it kind of rubbed them the wrong way, but it feels like it does enough to get me from area to area, and not enough to bog me down, where if I put my Switch down for 20 minutes to do the laundry or something and I come back, I'm not like, wait, where was I? What was Carl doing or whatever?
I really do love it when enemies don't level up with you and you can feel overpowered and come back and sort of lay waste to an area. It does feel good. I'm curious, though, what is it about this game initially that drew you in?
The art.
Oh, really?
100%. The art style, it taps into my nostalgia and my newest, latest, best, you know, wants at the same time, where I think it was maybe Polygon. I don't want to incorrectly attribute, so I don't remember, but somewhere had an article up and it was like, it took the most, you know, Unreal Engine 4 to deliver a game that looked this retro and this good. And whatever they're doing with Unreal 4 to kind of combine these graphical styles, it's stunning on the handheld and then on a big TV. It looks amazing. Yeah.
Awesome. Octopath Traveler. So are you sticking with it? You playing more?
I am sticking with it. I'm going out of town here in a little bit, and it's my playing game, because so much of else, well, I'll talk about another Switch game too, but a lot of my Switch games are Rocket League and Fortnite and Splatoon 2, and those require internet connection and a plane I don't trust. Excuse me, I need your good Wi-Fi because I'm playing Squad Fortnite.
By the way, semi-serious comment, Hollow Knight does not require any like connectivity. It doesn't do any background things like the Souls games do, in case anybody was curious.
So okay. selling that Hollow Knight to you, Christian. Do it.
And then the other game, my other Switch game that I'll talk about, is I picked up Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. I had a price point in mind for it because I already own it and beat it on Wii U.
Wow, and really?
I found it at that price point. Shout out to Wario64. And you guys, have either of you played it, Jeff or Mark?
Yes.
I have not. I've not played it.
I wish it wasn't $60, because it's a lot, but it's hard because there are so many, but I think it's top 10, top 5 platformers of all time.
No
it's
way.
So really? Well made. It's so well made. And what's great about it is that it's not pixel art, right? Like so many of the great platformers, and I'm not trying to take anything away from pixel art platformers. I gushed about Celeste on this show for weeks on end. But so many of them are that pixel art. So you get a pixel perfect platformer where you're able to see exactly what you can land on and what you can grab and what you can do. And what Retro did with their take on the Donkey Kong Country franchise, with making that, carrying forward the, I think it was Rare that did it the first time around, right? Or whoever did them on Super Nintendo, I don't remember. The developer, but that really cool 3D art on a 2D plane with like state-of-the-art animation, to do that again, and the Switch port of it is phenomenal. And even if you play as Funky Kong, who is the new character introduced for it, that's kind of like the when Homer was the dog in The Simpsons, or what was that character that whatever
Poochie.
Yes, yes, thank you, Jeff. Even when you play as Funky Kong, while it might make the platforming easier, the bosses are still very difficult. It's not like you can give a kid, you know, give your 5-year-old Funky Kong and they'll beat Tropical Freeze. Like the game is still going to require a lot from them, but the environments are gorgeous. The platforming is so rewarding and how it unlocks as you play through a level and finishing a level as an accomplishment, and then finding all of the Kong letter pieces and all the puzzle pieces and finding secrets where you didn't think there would be a secret. The way you can replay a level, you know, five times in a row and not even discover everything that that level has to offer.
Is that frustrating though?
No, because every time, well, I stick by my no answer, because every time you go through it, it's still fun. Where it can become frustrating when you know where something is and you're not able to get it, or if you're not able to, you just need one more puzzle piece and you haven't found where it is. But that, I think, is the joy of the game. And what I think Tropical Freeze did so well is this Nintendo approach of you don't need to do it, right? Like, it's like the scalability within one level where you complete the level and the confetti goes off and you're rewarded for that. And that can be enough. Finding two puzzle pieces, good for you. You found two, you find one, it gives you a little reward, you know? So it's you pushing yourself to 100% the game, which I did not do on Wii U, and I'm not sure if I'll do on Switch, but if you want it, that challenge is there. Kind of like, was, I think Galaxy really got me for a while on Wii, Mario Galaxy, where it's like, I forget the stars or the shines or whatever they were called. And some of them were so incredibly hard to find. Tropical Freeze, it's phenomenal. If you haven't played it, I think it is easy to recommend at $60, because I think it's that good of a game. If you've played it on Wii U, there's Funky Kong isn't worth the double dip, but if you can find it at a good price, it plays really well on the Switch and it still looks absolutely gorgeous.
I'm curious what that price is that made you get
40
it.
Bucks.
$40. Okay.
$40 is my price point. Okay. And if I may do one more, Mr. Kanata, if that's
you
okay.
May, of course.
This is the newest game of the ones that I'm talking about. Far Cry 5, the next DLC expansion or campaign, standalone campaign, came out. Lost on Mars. In it, you play as Nick Fry, who you might have unlocked in Far Cry 5 proper. He is the pilot assistant. And you are joined by Herc, who you might remember as the dude with the rocket launcher.
You'll have to be more specific.
Yeah, I don't quite. Yeah, in the grocery store.
If you've come across Herc, you know Herc. You had a Hummer, you had a rocket launcher. You had good times.
I just was being funny that all the characters are excited about blowing stuff up in that game.
They were. I really like this. I haven't finished it. Maybe 3 hours in. Feel like I'm getting close. But Octopath keeps pulling me, and so does Fortnite. Doesn't matter. You're on Mars. I think Mars looks really cool. It both feels desolate, and the towers you need to go to do all your far crying seems spaced out well enough. It has like a Tremors vibe to it, where the basic enemy are these crabs that burrow under the sand, and if you walk on smooth sand, it basically triggers them to your location. So
you
get an
Half-Life 2?
Half-Life 2 also, yes. I prefer anything with Kevin Bacon in it over a silent protagonist, but pretty early on.
6 degrees of separation away from Kevin Bacon, though, so.
it would have sealed the circle if Half-Life Episode 3 ever came out, Half-Life 2 Episode 3. Early on, you get a jetpack or a hover belt or whatever it's called. So there's like platforming that I think the Far Cry series handles pretty well. And I think the sense of humor is going to be hit and miss for people, because it is Nick and Herc, and there's a lot of Herc. There's a lot of Herc, and I like most of it, I would say. They poke fun at themselves again, whereas in Far Cry 5, you climb one tower at the very beginning, and it was like, don't worry, you won't be doing a lot of that. This game, you climb a tower, and Herc's like, yeah, we got a lot of towers to climb. What'd you expect? They want to have towers on Mars?
How do we get them to Mars? Do you want to tell us?
I'm happy to. It happens at the very beginning of the game. Herc
is
got
it funny?
Yeah. It works. They get abducted.
Okay. That's fun.
Yeah. They get sucked up. Okay. And part of that is wrestling with like, you're on Mars. Yeah, dude, it's great. Remember how you said you'd help me if I ever got in a situation because of a girl? He's like, no. Well, you did and you do. So I'm coming to get you. And it's really well done. And then the care that goes into these little DLC packs or whatever, where it's not just reskinning of weapons from the, you know, the main campaign. It's new future Mars looking guns that are energy based. So you're not collecting ammo. I'm really enjoying it so far. It feels very different than the first one, which felt like the Vietnam one felt like a throwback to Far Cry jungle area, and being in Mars feels fun and different. So that's Far Cry 5, the Lost on Mars DLC that I got when I bought the gold edition. I don't know how much it is standalone.
Say what you will about those guys, but they pack their games full of content and they keep updating it, and they seem to be having a lot of fun with their games. Yes. So,
Real quick, Christian, I'm curious, what was your thoughts on the base game, Far Cry 5?
Well, you're going to be surprised when I say this after I said it about Octopath, Donkey Kong, and Lost on Mars. I did not finish it. I still like it. I go back to it. I have Plant Girl unlocked as my second family member to go and take down. And I like it. I probably would have been playing that this week, but for Lost on Mars coming out and me doing this show.
Right.
Okay. I wanted to play the new thing to talk about the new thing. But I still enjoy my time with it. I struggle with it between its gameplay and its narrative, where like the people you meet in the world seem so fun and silly, and then the plot is very serious at times.
Yeah.
But the gameplay of it, I really enjoy. Did you like it, Mark?
It's weird. So it's weird with that game, because I do enjoy the series. I started with John, that region, and really enjoyed it. But by the time I got to the daughter, I was really kind of pushing. And then Jake is the last region, if I remember correctly, and I was really pushing, and it was just because I kind of wanted to see what would happen with the story. Mm-hmm. And I did play all of it. I didn't do all the stuff. I dabbled in the side stuff. It was pretty good, but I think Far Cry 4, even Far Cry 3 are better games overall. Some of the quality of life stuff is good. It's fun. I really like the drop-in wingsuit when you fast travel somewhere. That was awesome. I don't know. It didn't pay off for me. I was pretty disappointed with it in the end. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll get to it, I say, knowing I probably will never.
Lost on Mars sounds kind of neat, though. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm really enjoying it. And I think because of that, I like these smaller Far Cry experiences. I get to get in, you know, take down my bases or climb my towers and know that I'm 5 hours away from the next one and not, oh, this was fun. Oh, 20 more hours. I mean, I am having fun, but that map looks like work when you open it up and there's so much to do. It's that, wow, there's a lot to do in this game.
Even the expansion?
Deep breath. No, I'm saying that's what I like about the expansion is they feel manageable to me in a way that the main game doesn't at times.
Are they sort of open in their side stuff, or is it pretty funneled but open?
No, it's open, and they all have side missions. The first one, the Vietnam one, you can beat in an hour if you want. You can just go right to the end. But it's like, or save your teammates and go do this and go take down these hideouts. And the Mars one is similar in that it gives you fun thing. I don't want to. One of them is very fun and kind of a Easter egg. But yeah, there's stuff to do.
Cool.
I never really followed up on this, but this seems like a good point to mention it. Before E3, I asked people to let us know whether they were more interested in us talking about more different games, more new other games every week, or deeper discussions on games week after week. You know, I think we were kind of debating that, you and I, Christian. I never really reported it on the show, but I got a lot of feedback about that. And the vast majority of people, to my surprise, said they wanted more new, different games. So I was surprised to see it too. And it was the vast majority of feedback. So we've been trying to do that, and we will continue to. But I just thought that was interesting, and I wanted to surface it to the audience. I keep forgetting to bring it up on the show. But thank you all for your feedback on that. And you know, we're trying to play as many kinds of things as we can. As I talk about games that I've already talked about before, about too. another thing that's interesting to me, as far as trends go, is the past 4 or 5 weeks, now that we're in summer, we've had obviously a different guest on every week. And yet this recurring theme seems to have emerged. And that is summer's for Switch. Every single person is like, I've been playing so much more Switch now. And I don't know if that's because people are outside more, on the go more, traveling, doing things, going places, or what, but it certainly seems like, or maybe there's just, there aren't huge releases that aren't on Switch right now. I don't know what it is, but we've seen, I think, more people talking about Switch games in the last 3 or 4 weeks than the rest of the year. So with that being said, Christian's talking about Octopath very favorably. Mark is suggesting we all play Hollow Knight. I want to add a game in that just came out this week. I talked about it last year. In fact, it was on one. It was on my top five diamonds in the rough list at the end of the year that we always do. We do our top five games of the year, and then we do our top five games that most people aren't talking about. So it came out last year on PC, and I played a lot of it. And now it is out on Switch.
Oh.
It's called Hand of Fate 2. And I highly, highly, highly recommend people check it out. If you're looking for a game to play on Switch in the summer, this is a great one. It is a wonderful mashup of a sort of card-based, roguelike, push-your-luck game, turn-based, sort of a board game, I guess, a card-based board game where you move a pawn along a route and you encounter various things that happen. And when you encounter a fight, it turns into a third-person action game that is very reminiscent of the combat from something like Batman Arkham games. I think it's a wonderful mashup of those two styles, and I loved the first Hand of Fate. I screamed from the heavens about it, and I think Hand of Fate 2 is a great continuation and has wonderful little improvements. And now it's out on Switch, so I just kind of, as a public service announcement, wanted to mention that for people that may have not been playing it because it was only out on PC before.
Have you tried it on Switch yet, Jeff?
I have not tried it on Switch yet.
I almost bought it on Switch because I was like, oh, I wonder how this plays.
I'm sure it's great. I played it on PC with a controller. You want a controller. Yeah. So because you want to play it like a third person action beat 'em up, you know, I think playing with a pro controller or probably even just playing it with the Joy-Cons would be great.
Yeah, I played the first one and enjoyed it. I didn't play it a ton, but the second one, I'm kind of looking at some gameplay videos now. It looks kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to double dip, but I might. Anyway, the game that I have been playing the most this week, and I can't even tell you why I went back to it. I think I saw it on a Steam sale and went, oh man, I haven't played that in a while. And I saw it had a bunch of updates. I'm just going to fire it up. Is a game, another game that I have talked about in the show before, but not in a long time, and that is Slay the Spire. I adore this game. Oh God, I love it. And it has gotten so much better. It's still in early access, technically. And this is another one that I think will be amazing on Switch. And they do have plans to bring it to Switch and to mobile. I think this game could be amazing on an iPad or on your phone. It's just, and it's coming to those places after it gets out of early access, according to the developers. But it's still in early access now, technically. And they have updated a bunch since the last time I got into it, including adding an entire third character. So there were two characters when I played the game, sort of a warrior type character and I guess the warrior was called the Ironclad. And there was a rogue type character called the Silent. They've added a third called the Defect, I guess. And that one is so much more different. The warrior behaves kind of like you would think a warrior would behave. Lots of armor, lots of endurance, lots of staying in the fight and whittling down the opponent. The rogue behaves kind of like you would think a rogue would. Lots of poison, lots of dots, lots of big damage spells, cards. And the defect plays very, very differently than anything I've ever seen in a game before. It's the defect because it's a robot. It's a robot, everybody. It's a robot wizard. A robot wizard.
My dad says robot.
It is the best.
A robot is pretty great.
Robot. Yes. So this is a robot that casts spells. And the way it casts spells is it has these orbs. And you fill the orb with a power, like frost or lightning or dark or whatever. It has a kind of sort of an elemental aspect to it. And then those orbs sort of do everything have a function that they do passively every turn, or you can exile them, which empties them out of your little orb and empties your orb, but then attacks the enemy or protects yourself or does some effect. So you're kind of managing these orbs all the time, but you're also, you know, doing other attacks and doing all kinds of cool spells along the way that are all themed with robot attacks. It is very, very fun. It is a really cool character. It's very, plays very different than the other two. And Slay the Spire, if you don't haven't heard me talk about it or I'm not familiar with the game, is a card game, push your luck, roguelike. How far can you get up the spire? There's three levels of bosses, but they're like pathways along the way that you can fight things or get into encounters that are question marks that could be good, could be bad. Go and you'll buy new cards to add to your deck. You'll upgrade cards that do certain things. And you're just creating this awesome deck of abilities and trying to learn how to manage it on the fly as you build better and better things on your way progressing up the spire. It is a gameplay loop that I find absolutely irresistible and love. And the game is so beautifully designed. The interplay of the cards is so fun. And they've now added another thing they've added in early access is daily challenges.
Oh,
so,
no.
I know. Oh, I know.
You might have to stop. This is getting...
I've been doing these daily challenges and... they're really fun. Oftentimes it'll be like, we gave you a random deck, go, and try to get the, you know, higher on the leaderboards than anybody else. I, of course, you know, I'm not, but it's really great fun. And the new character is great. It's Slay the Spire is awesome. I can't wait till it comes to mobile platforms, because then I'll play it even more than just sitting behind my PC. I can't recommend this game higher. It is, if you like those kinds of things, if you like card-based combat, if you like turn-based combat, thinking through how to play your hand, how to play cards to maximize things, how to push your luck farther and farther, using your health as a resource. Another thing the game does really, really well is you get these artifacts as you go that let you break rules in the game. And there's no limit to how many artifacts you can get on a run. So you can just like have this incredibly long string of rule-breaking, awesome effects. Some of them are like, do something amazing, but you have to give something up. Like the last run I did earlier today, actually, was this incredible card or incredible artifact that let me get way more mana on every turn. So I could play more cards, but I could only ever play six cards in a single turn, which I was like, that's fine, six cards. But every single turn I would butt up against that limit. And I was like, oh, so it's so beautifully designed. And I just adore Slay the Spire, which I've been playing a lot of lately.
I have to say, I'm watching a gameplay video, and this might sound kind of strange, but the UI has like a good flow to it. Like the way the cards kind of slide back into the deck or whoosh out and kind of spin up and flip out into the gameplay.
The game is not much to look at. I mean, it's not a graphical powerhouse or showcase by any stretch of the imagination, but no. It is so mechanically sound and tightly designed, and all the card interplay and the way that the other thing that I haven't mentioned, but I did the first time I talked about Slay the Spire long ago, that I find to be so interesting about this game is that unless you break it with an artifact, you know what the enemy is going to do every turn. The bad guys you're fighting literally will tell you exactly what they're going to do, how much they're going to attack you for, what they're going to defend, how, you know what they're going to do. So it creates this wonderful strategic proposition of how do I play my hand? Because I know exactly what's coming at me next turn. So how do I prepare for that or mitigate it, or who do I target? So there's a lot of information that you have that informs what cards you play. You're not just sort of hoping, it's not like Hearthstone where it's like, well, I have a strategy and I could kind of infer what my opponent might pull out, but this is, your PvE, but what you're seeing is exactly what the enemies you're fighting are going to do on their turn. So I don't know. I just adore this game. It's so good. And I don't know why I'm back. I'm like back in it. I hadn't played it for months and now I'm back in it because it's got all this new stuff to do.
So you're back on the same platform, right?
Still on PC. Yeah, it's still okay. In early access on PC. So, like I said, they plan to bring it to other platforms, but not yet. All right. That's our playlist. Let's take a second and thank our second sponsor, which is a sponsor that I also adore, Blue Apron. Blue Apron. Let me just tell you the Blue Apron recipe that I made tonight. I have it right here. If you're watching, if you're in our live stream, you get video and you can see I'm holding up cavatelli and shrimp. Was delicious. I mean, the idea that I would ever have made in my life cavatelli and shrimp is amazing. Like, this is who I am now. I'm a guy that just busts out cavatelli and shrimp with vegetables. I mean, it is with summer vegetables is the full title of this recipe, in fact. But I wasn't a guy that cooked. I made like hot dogs and chili three nights a week when I was single and alone. Pizza and it was garbage. I was giving myself garbage, but Blue Apron has saved me from that because I get fresh ingredients. I get great recipes. I get step-by-step instructions that tell me how to make it. And I don't have to worry about deciding what to have. There are a bunch of recipes for me to choose from every single week. There's the two-person meal plan and the family plan that you can choose from. You can go ahead and select your meals. You can pick 2, 3, or 4 recipes based on what fits your schedule. And that's out of a pool of 12 recipes every single week. So I have this fun where I go in and I get to pick out what I'm going to get the next few weeks. And they're amazing recipes. They're really delicious. They have tons of variety in my life. They're much, much healthier. I know exactly what's going in to all of them because I watch it happen. And like, I would never have known. The way I would make pasta when I was single is I would get noodles, I would boil them, and then I would get a jar of pasta sauce, and I'd put that jar of pasta sauce on my noodles. Done. That was stupid. The way I've learned how to make a recipe like this, cavatelli and shrimp, where you can actually use the water that you boil your noodles in as part of the sauce, and you can just add some lemon and lemon zest, and it actually creates a much more subtle, not so rich and thick experience, and you're eating much healthier, and it's so flavorful and amazing. I got to tell you guys, it has changed my life. It's convenient. There's much more variety. It's flexible. I cook for my family. I like who I am because of it. It's great. So check out this week's menu and then get your first 3 meals free on us. BlueApron.com/DLC. That's BlueApron.com/DLC to get your first 3 meals free. Check it out for yourself. Don't trust me. Just try it. BlueApron.com/DLC. I guarantee you, you will be surprised at what you're capable of if you're like me and how delicious this stuff can taste. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. So it's been a while since we had a Tabletop Time segment on the show, and I know that I'm the only one that's really been playing any board games, but I wanted to mention one that I played recently because I came to this one kind of differently than I come to most that I play. Normally, I'm the guy that's sort of on the inside checking out all the new releases and getting excited about things and reading up what people think of them and finding out what's coming out at Essen and Gen Con and getting excited about all the latest board games. But recently, I had a game night, and I didn't really have anything that was super perfect for the group that I was going to play with. And that's because we're going to be 5 of us. 5 is kind of a weird number. Sometimes you want to split into 3 and 2, but we didn't want to. We wanted to have all 5 playing. And I had a bunch of games sitting around that I was excited to play. They were all 4-player max. So I thought, I'm just going to drive down to my local board game store, and I'm just going to look and see what I see and see what I can pick up. And what I settled on was a game called Battle for Greyport. This is a Red Dragon Inn universe game. A Red Dragon Inn is a series of games that I have enjoyed very much in the past, but they are very cutthroat. These are very, very cutthroat games. You're kind of attacking your friends and divvying up loot. The idea is it's the tavern that all the role-playing people hang out at. But the group that I was playing with tends to prefer games where we're not at each other's throats, tends to prefer games where we're not being super competitive, likes to team up. We play a lot of, escape room board games or time stories or game, you know, games where we can all have a good time, or D&D games where we can all have a good time together and we're all sharing the experience and teaming up and not fighting among each other. And so Battle for Greyport was what I picked. And Battle for Greyport is a deck building game that's cooperative and it's all basically PvE. So deck building games like Dominion are where you start with a hand of cards and you play a few of them every turn. And then at a certain point, you have the ability to buy more cards to enter them into your deck and they improve your deck over time. And Battle for Greyport does that mechanic in a very smart way. It allows you to select a character at the beginning of the game, and that character is one of the cards in your deck, but it's a card that never gets extinguished. You always get to play it should you choose. And then you can get items that you can attach to your character, and you can play other heroes out of your hand and attach items to them and then attack monsters. And the thing that's happening in Battle for Greyport is there are monsters attacking parts of the city. So there is a location where you and all your adventurer friends are located, and that is under attack from a certain number of monsters. But each of you is also under attack from a certain number of monsters, and you have to try to save this location of the city. There are different scenarios that have kind of different tweaks on that formula, but ultimately what you're always doing is trying to save the city and kill all the monsters. So the weird thing about this game is everybody can fight all at the same time. There's no turns. You can all go in whatever order you decide because it's a cooperative game. You're making those decisions in and of yourselves. But whosever turn it is, who's ever the active player, is the one who's being attacked. And the only one whose monsters everybody can attack. So you're all only – you all have monsters in front of you that will attack you, but they're not going to right now. They're only going to attack if you're the active player, and everybody can only attack the active player's monsters. But what you want to do is attack the monsters in front of the city, because the city's health is going to get whittled down. If you lose the city, you lose the potential to get really cool stuff by saving the city. And the game evolves over time. You can level up, and there's stages, different locations that you go to. So what you end up having to do is attack the active player's monsters to try to kill all of them so that you can then attack the city monsters. But you only get to refresh your deck of cards after you've been the active player. So if you're spending all your cool cards out of your hand to attack the monsters in front of your friend, you're less able to do things as the turns progress until you get to your turn. So there's all these wonderful decisions to be made about when to use my cards, when to use somebody else's cards. And everybody is attacking all at the same time, so you can all contribute something all the time as well. Nobody's sitting around waiting for their turn. Nobody is the alpha gamer telling everybody what to do, because you all have your own problems to deal with, as well as the grand central problem that you're all contributing for.
Is this game called Life? I forgot what you said the game.
It's called Battle for Greyport, a Red Dragon Inn game. I found it to be really clever and fun. I think the art is not great. It's kind of in the same style of Red Dragon Inn, and I've never found that particular art style to be satisfying and evocative for me. There's a lot of games that have, I think, much, much better art, or art that is much more to my liking. So that would be a place I would ding it, is that I didn't pull up a card and go, oh, that's so rad, I have this cool looking thing. But there are plenty of cool behaving things that I do find. And we had a good time. I mean, I think if you have that kind of group like I have, where everybody wants to have an adventure, but nobody wants to play as the DM. I mean, ultimately, I'm usually the one that's the DM, but I just didn't have the time to craft a story this time. So I said, let me find a game where the game crafts the problem and creates the story for us. Not a ton of story here per se, but a fun adventure that we were all involved in and we were all on the same team for. And I found it to be really fun. It was a pleasant surprise. It's a game I really wasn't aware of before I went to the game store. I just browsed the aisles looking for a 5-player cooperative game. And this one was a pleasant surprise. Again, it's called Battle for Greyport.
That sounds pretty fun. But Jeff, I got to ask, have you actually had like massive arguments over board games or had friends?
Constantly.
Are you serious? No, like, oh I mean, like for realsies, like yes. arguments.
Yes. Wow. You do not understand the group that I play with.
I don't.
These guys, whatever the time that a game says it's going to take on the box, you know, board games always say 60 to 90 minutes or 30 minutes per player, or there's some always on the spine of a board game these days. It'll tell you what the expected play time is. Whatever that is for my group, triple it. Triple it. And why? Why? Because we argue incessantly. There is nonstop rules arguments. Yeah. You can't do that. Wait, yes, I can. Sidetracked to talking about movies, to talking about video games, back to the board game. Now, wait, now, can I even, let's look at the rules again. I can't, are we able to even do this? What are you, yeah, it is.
When do we get that show?
Believe me, there's been discussions, but it's bad.
Would you guys have, if you did the show, would you include a battle royale mode?
I mean, I think it is. I think that's what it is.
That's essentially it. Okay.
Battle royale for board games. Yeah. All right. I want to answer this email. Well, it's not even answered. I want to read this email. We got an email this week to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. That's where you can send any emails you like, any comments you have about the show or questions or quick questions. Not doing quick questions this week, but we welcome those there. This is a kind of a longer thing that I found to be pretty cool. I wanted to read it on the show and get you guys, your reactions, the two of you guys. This comes from Nick from Atlanta, Georgia. He says, I wanted to write in about what I'll be doing in a couple of weeks. First off, I love the show. It's always been fun times listening while I'm working. Y'all definitely make it better while I'm working in the Georgia heat. So to the meat of my story, on August 4th, my brother, friend, and myself will be traveling to Vancouver for the week. What makes this trip so meaningful is that it will be the first time meeting the people I've played with online. We've been friends for almost 10 years. We met through Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Ever since then, we have been inseparable. We are all friends on Facebook and message each other all the time. There will be 10 of us from all over hanging out for the week. Three live in Vancouver. One is from Chicago. Another one is from Washington. The furthest one is coming from New Zealand.
Wow.
We have been planning this for 2 years.
That is amazing.
We are all excited. We're all getting excited over this. Our clan name is called EH Clan. It means extremely hostile. And I would love to write back. I would love to write back after the trip and tell all the stories we had. I would love to hear that, Nick. I'm excited. I want to kind of create anticipation in our audience too, because I hope to hear some cool stories. I think that's incredible that you guys have been buddies for 10 years and literally never met in person. I hope this isn't a catfish situation, but I'm sure it isn't. I wonder, Mark and Christian, if you've ever had anything even remotely like this or know of anybody that have.
I actually have. Christian, do you want to go though?
I can just say I've met people that I've met on Twitter or people I've, you know, met from this show, or someone has reached out digitally. And then when I'm in town, either for a stand-up show or they're in LA, I've grabbed coffee with people. And one of them I only knew digitally, and then he stayed at my house. That's how I, Philippe, who's been on this show and was on Week and Confirmed. So yeah, sometimes I put myself out there maybe more than I should, but I love it. I love when you're able to mark against our conversation we said before we started rolling. I do love how the internet makes the world a smaller place. So yeah, I've had nothing this large or this long, long standing, I guess, of like one group, but also Chris, who's been on this show, we met like through Twitter and our love of rollerblading. And yeah, I've met a lot of good people that way. It's like, I mean, Jeff, it's like online dating, but for friends, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I just think it's cool that these kinds of things can be created and be legit friendships, and yet you've never met in real life. You know, I'm so curious what it's going to be like if these guys all feel super comfortable immediately, or if there'll be some weirdness in person. I don't know. I think that's cool. What about you, Mark? You said you had something similar.
I did. So way back when I played a ton of Quake 2, like back in 97, 98, I had a Quake clan that I ran, and there were like 10 people in it, and we played every day constantly. And we had an IRC channel, and we would all meet in there, and we played together for a couple of years, and we finally all met. And one person came from Canada. It was pretty amazing. And to answer your question, I mean, I don't know how it's going to be for them, but when we finally all got into a room, by the way, we rented out a it was a hotel room. It wasn't necessarily like a conference room, but we just wanted like a big room that we can just network all our stuff. And we got like a big room, and we all brought our computers, and we played Quake. Like, we just had our own little LAN party there.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was so much fun. And those guys were great. And it wasn't weird. It was awesome. We had a really good time. And I mean, if anything, it solidified our relationships. I mean, again, that was 20 years ago, so I don't actually talk to, I'm friends with some of them.
Didn't solidify them that much.
Not 20 years long. Well, I mean, we kind of, people got married and we stopped playing multiplayer games. I don't really play multiplayer games anymore just because I need a game I can pause. But it was great though. I mean, I don't regret it. It was awesome. It was a really good time. And yeah, really good relationships and like long lasting friendships can come. There are like one or two that I still talk to, but not like all 12 of them.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's great, man. And I think my equivalent to that is more people I've collaborated with in podcasting, and then really realized that we hadn't ever been in the same room together, or just met once at a con and then started doing a podcast for years. And then, you know, even Dave and Devendra, like Devendra lives in New York and Dave lives in Seattle, and we do the Slash Filmcast every week. We all were in the same room together for Dave's wedding earlier this year. And, it was the first time we'd been on the same room since like Comic-Con 2007 or something like that. It was 2008, something like that. So it would, you know, we talk every single week and feel like we know each other very, very well, but we hadn't actually been in the same physical location. So that's cool.
So when are you and Christian actually going to meet?
Oh, I will never meet him. We've made that very clear that it's in my writer.
We're actually the same person, Mark. I don't know if you know that, but two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Oh my God. Fight Club.
Yeah. He's my Tyler Durden. Anyway, Nick, please do keep us updated on how this goes. We want to hear the cool stories, and we'll update the audience as well.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, let's thank our final sponsor, Gamefly. You heard Christian talk about Octopath Traveler. You know how Christian got to play Octopath Traveler?
Gamefly.
Gamefly, right? How did you get to play Mario Tennis Aces?
Gamefly.
Gamefly is the best way to buy and rent all of your favorite games. Gamefly puts video games where they belong, in your hands.
I think in my Nintendo Switch?
In Christian's Nintendo Switch. That's where all video games belong. Your monthly subscription to Gamefly.com. You pick your favorite games from over 9,000 titles, and then they get mailed directly to your door. You don't ever have to worry about late fees. You don't ever have to worry about getting the game back in a certain amount of time. Play it as long as you want. Finish the game. Whatever you want to do, hang on to it. Send it back when you're done. They send you the next game on your list. That's the way you can play more games. It saves you a bundle. It's as little as 54 cents a day, always free shipping. You can cancel anytime. It's one monthly fee with unlimited video game rentals. And also they have movies, so you can rent movies should you want to do that as well. This is great. You never have to leave your house or worry about the game you want being out of stock, like at your local retailer. If you go to gamefly.com/DLC2, that's gamefly.com/DLC and the number 2. You can start your free premium 30-day trial today. The premium trial allows you to check out 2 games and or movies at a time. And you can only get this offer by visiting gamefly.com/DLC2. You can get free month with other offers, but that's only one game. You can get two, hence the big number two after DLC 2, only at gamefly.com/DLC2. Now go sign up, start playing all your favorite games absolutely free for 30 days. All right, guys, that is going to do it for this episode. We do have our parting gifts coming up. But Mark DeSanto, thank you so much for being here, sir.
Dude, thanks so much for having me. This is a blast.
Absolutely. We loved it. And tell people where they can keep up with you and the things you do online.
Well, I am on Twitter. You can find me at HeyMarkD, D as in Delta, and also my YouTube channel, youtube.com/IEatGames, one word.
Very cool. Christian, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, Jeff, I think I can say this the way I'm going to say it. So stop me at any time. Live stream will get it if they get it. We've been working on a thing, and it is soft launch out for people to consume it. We've been tweeting
soft
them out.
Soft launch is the best launch.
Soft launch is the best launch. Kind of like a soft boiled egg. It's good.
Yeah.
We've been tweeting them out. I took the liberty to compile all of them, or most, not all of them, some of them on my website, because finding them all other ways is not as easy as it hopefully will be later. But if you go to my website, christianspicer.com, on the sidebar, you'll see a page called Week in Review.
Soft launch!
Soft launch. And you can watch them there. It's a thing that Jeff and I have been working on that I'm very proud of, and hopefully people will dig it. I also have a thing there called Local Co-op that I'm also proud of. Only one is up there. And it's definitely soft launch, but there's a lot of good stuff coming, and so that's one way to check it out, and one way to talk about it.
Soft launch. Yeah, we soft launched the heck out of it. And if you have been watching our Twitter feeds, you have seen links, as Christian mentioned. I've gotten a lot of really awesome feedback from people. Thank you to all of you that have watched it and sent your feedback on what you thought. A lot of people really dig them. So thanks. Christian and I are working hard. They're video content. And if you like this show, I think you'll dig them. They're a little different than what we do here, a little more structured, a little more written. But as Christian said, we're both very proud of them. And it's soft launch, which means you have to go to Christian's website, kind of, to find him as an odd player. It's all soft. It's the softest. But nonetheless, the content, I think, is worth it. And I think you guys will dig it. So give it a shot. Check it out. Week in Review. Soft launch.
Soft launch. Jeff, what about you? Well, what movie are you doing this week?
We are on Slash Filmcast, of course, is what you're talking about, slashfilmcast.com. We're doing Sorry to Bother You.
No, it's okay. It's no bother. Go ahead.
No, Sorry to Bother You, Christian. That's the movie we're doing, which, woo, what a movie. Wow. You guys should definitely listen to us talk about that one. And then, of course, next week we'll be doing the Mission Impossible Fallout. So lots of good stuff to check out, slashfilmcast.com. So don't miss it. Also, at Jeff Cannata is the Twitter for me, with two N's and one T, of course. And I guess that's all I have to plug these days. Used to be a lot more, but, you know, things happen. All right. So let's give some people things to do this week with their parting gifts. Mark,
yes.
You have something to help people get through their week?
I don't know about that, but I do have a recommendation for somebody if they're in the market for an electronic vehicle. I had a reservation for a Model 3 for quite a while. I reserved my Model 3, I think, the day they went up. And so I waited. I got pushed back like three times. The car I was driving, it was a G35. It was a 2003 Nissan Infiniti G35. Loved the car, but it was 15 years old, and it was time to just get something new. I needed something new, just a commute car, basically.
And Elon let you down.
I couldn't wait. They pushed. It got pushed back. He pushed it back. Like, he looked at my paperwork and said, "Well, no,
not for this guy. Smart guy.
Yeah, nope.
Yeah."
So it got pushed back until like February, March of 2019. And so my wife and I just kind of looked at each other and said, well, I think we're just going to kind of see what else is out there. So I started test driving a bunch of EVs, and I fell in love with the Nissan Leaf. The 2018 is a new design, so they don't look like big bugs anymore with wheels chasing you down on the freeway. They're actually nice looking cars now. They don't look obnoxious. And it's just nice to have a car that now has like a USB port and an auxiliary. My car, it didn't have that stuff. I mean, I had a tape player, and that's how I played like my iPhone. That's how I played my music and listened to podcasts. And it's just a great, great car. It goes 150 miles on one full charge. Nissan, and I didn't even know this. Like, the sales guys didn't tell me about this, but Nissan has this no charge to charge program. So basically they pay for your charging for the first 2 years.
Oh, wow.
So I've had this car since February. I haven't paid a penny to charge it because I don't charge it at home. I'll charge it like at the fast chargers in the mall or somewhere else. I have one near work. So what I'll do is I can get 50% in 30 minutes at a level 3 charge.
Wow.
And so I just do that. And so it's been great. I really like this car. I like how it handles. I could sit all four of us in the car comfortably.
That's great.
It's really interesting because it has this thing, and I'm sure other EVs have it, but I can't speak to them, but it has something called an e-pedal, and that's Nissan's one pedal accelerator.
Yeah, it works like a golf cart, right?
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. And so instead, as soon as you lift up on the gas pedal, it engages the regenerative brakes really aggressively. So it will essentially, when you get good enough at it, you don't really ever brake unless something jumps out in front of your car, or you just need to like actually park the car and, you know, stop on a dime. But I drive
because of the regenerative brakes, you'll never need a brake job, right?
I mean, I don't about never, but the guys at that dealership are like, it's going to be a long time. If you use that e-pedal and you get really good at it, like, you're probably not going to need your brakes changed for a really long time. And it actually works. I mean, it's cool. It's almost kind of gamey with the gauge because you can see when you're putting energy back into the battery.
Right.
And now I know why all those other EVs and hybrids are on the freeway are driving really, really slowly on the freeway, you know, because it costs. It's the opposite of combustion engines where, you know, you get more miles on the freeway, and around town, you know, you get fewer miles. Right. But with an EV, you get a lot more miles just driving around town because you're using your regenerative brakes constantly. And on the freeway, it takes a lot of energy to kind of
go
60 miles per hour. So anyway, if you're in the market, highly recommended. I love my Leaf. It's a lot of fun to drive. It's got a ton of torque, and it's great.
Well, I think, Mark, I think you have the new record for the most expensive parting gift.
Yes.
By
the way, it's worth noting it was $35,000 for the car. There was no – those cars are selling like hotcakes, so I couldn't even talk them down. Instead, they gave me more money for my car as a trade-in. Hmm. They actually gave me over the Blue Book. And, you know, you get the $5,000 federal tax credit. California gives you $2,500. It's pretty sweet.
So that's a 2018 Nissan Leaf. Very, very cool parting gift. Christian, how about you? You got a parting gift?
I'll sneak two in because they're related. One is Real Friends had a new album come out a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, maybe 1 week ago. I talked about them before. Pop punk still going forward, or the kind of that vein, maybe alternative now or rock, however genres change. And then two, that's the one anyone can do, is go listen to that album. Two, if they are coming to your town and you haven't missed it yet, the wife and I went to Paramore in concert, and what a great show. They sold out the Forum here in LA, which is really cool for this band that's been going at it for forever. Their last album, After Laughter, put out by Fueled by Ramen, is an incredible album. And Haley, I think, is one of the best front people in the business, where she's singing her guts out and dancing and laying it all on the line like a real rock show. And it was really cool. I haven't seen them live in, I don't know, 8 years, something like that. Really great show. And if you like their music and they're coming to your city, definitely go check them out. Paramore.
Very cool. Cool. We have a listener suggested parting gift, which you can always submit to the show. If you want to hear your parting gift, share it with our audience. You can send that to DLCfeedback @gmail.com. This one comes from Will Bowler. Bowler? Probably Bowler. Will says, this past weekend, I went axe throwing, and I would recommend trying it. It was wonderful, and you get to hurl an axe across a range and hit a target. Boy. There's something primal and amazing about standing there with an axe in hand, knowing you're about to chuck it. Now, I appreciate that, Will, but I guess I just Google axe throwing because you didn't tell me how do I do this. I just Google axe throwing and there'll be a place that I can do that in my vicinity. Is that how it works? Is this a thing that people can just go do, or is it special? I don't know.
I bet it's more common than you think.
Axe throwing, guys. Will says it's a blast. Sounds cool. Sounds like a Ren Faire thing. But I guess there are places where you can go do that. So cool.
I'd throw it once and then stand there with my hand out, just waiting, like, for it to come back.
Yeah. Like,
Kratos.
I would probably throw it and then it would not get stuck in it would hit the handle, would hit what I was hitting, and it would just fall to the ground, and then I would walk away embarrassed.
I would be constantly pressing X trying to get it to come back.
Yeah, exactly. All right. My parting gift is the Mission Impossible new 4K Blu-rays. If you listen to the Slash Filmcast, we did a big retrospective on all the Mission Impossible movies in anticipation of the next one, which I'm seeing it tomorrow. I'm so excited. And we got all these. They were sent to us by Paramount. So I did get these all complimentary. But I will tell you that the 4K transfer is really cool. It has an HDR 4K disc and a regular Blu-ray disc. But that's not even really what I want to talk about, because I talked about all that on the Slash Filmcast. What I want to talk about is what I hadn't watched all of before then, but I spent last night watching, which is the special features. There's like each of them has a disc of special features. And I came away going, Tom Cruise is a real superhero. He's like a real life Batman. I mean, say what you will about his beliefs and personal life, messy, but also Batman's are. If watching all those special features of all the movies back to back, the only thing that happens over and over and over again is everyone who's an expert in their field, like the stunt coordinators, the special guys that are training Tom to do the next insane thing he does in the movie, they all of them back to back are like, he's incredible. I've never seen anyone take to this. Like he learned how to do all the things we do in a week. It's like all of them say that. They're like, I've never seen anyone pick this up as fast as Tom did. Over and over the course of 15 years of movies. It's like he does all his own motorcycle riding in the last movie in Rogue Nation. He did this crazy training to hold his breath for 6 minutes. He, learned how to scale the side of the biggest building in the world for Mission Impossible 4. He, held onto the side of an airplane. All these things that he learned how to do, it's incredible. And it's really fun watching the behind the scenes of all those sequences, because you go, this is not a human being. This is a superhuman being. It's wild. So I highly recommend that. Okay. That's our show. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks again to Mark DeSanto and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to all the folks in our chat rooms for hanging out with us in real time, making the show better. We appreciate that. Thanks to Patrick L. Sean Madigan and Zero Star for the cool bumpers that you hear in the show. And thanks to all of you who download the show. We appreciate you listening. Thank you very much. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster.
According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get select style selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit Lowe's.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.